Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Why are we so good at putting off the tasks we need to accomplish and so bad at keeping them from eating away at us anyway? Fully 25% of U.S. adults can be described as chronic procrastinators, and more than 95% of those say they would really like to get themselves in gear. So why can't we, as the Nike folks might suggest, just do it? Jane B. Burka is my guest this hour. She's a psychologist and co-founder with Lenora Ewan of the first procrastination treatment group in the U.S. at the University of California at Berkeley. They've just released an updated edition of their book, Procrastination: Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. Jane, welcome to Think.
Hi, thank you very much.
You've been studying this phenomenon for decades. What do we understand about procrastination today that wasn't known when you started out?
Well, it's interesting that the reasons behind procrastination are not that different from when we wrote our first book 25 years ago. But the ways that people procrastinate have exploded because of the Internet. The Internet is the single greatest contributor to procrastination nowadays. And also, there's new information about biology and neuroscience that clarifies some of the reasons why people tend to put things off. We first started out writing about the psychology of procrastination, and now we also are paying attention to the biology of procrastination.
The book makes it clear that procrastination is a lot more complicated than simply, you know, poor work ethic. Why do we tend to put things off?
Well, procrastination, as you say, is not just about doing it. It is misunderstood very often as an issue of time management, as an issue of discipline, lack of will, and people feel very badly about themselves and their characters when they procrastinate. But in fact, the reasons behind procrastination are very complicated and are psychological at base. For most people, procrastination is a strategy that they use, although they're not aware of it this way, but it's a strategy they use to avoid other anxieties. So they end up blaming themselves for not getting started on time, for not being organized, for not managing their time, rather than really put themselves to the test, use all the time they can, do the best they can, and then see where they would fall. So procrastination is used as a kind of buffer for other fears that people may not be so aware of.
I was fascinated to read that procrastinators tend to be either afraid of failure or afraid of success. I would not have put those things together with procrastination.
Oh, well, those are big roots for procrastination. Fear of failure is one that people recognize in themselves rather easily. So if I feel that I have to be brilliant, and if I'm not brilliant, then I'm not worth anything. If I feel that only 100% is acceptable, and anything less than 100%, like 95%, heaven forbid, 55%, is totally disaster, then I'm going to be putting a lot of pressure on myself to be at the highest level all the time. And so if you have that kind of pressure, then the work that you're looking at, it becomes a mountain. It's not just the task in front of you, but it becomes a measure of whether you, in fact, are perfect, whether you are brilliant. And so there's so much anxiety that gets developed around, I have to do right or else I'm nothing, that you tend to avoid the task because it's become so big. And also, this is where procrastination comes in as a buffer, because if you procrastinate and you don't allow all the time you need, you can't possibly do your best. So what gets measured in the end is not really your ability. What gets measured is your skill at brinksmanship. I pulled it off at the last minute, and I did this well, so if I had really done my best, I would have done very well. So people who are afraid of failure tend to feel that their own self-worth, that their value as a person, rides on their performance. And procrastination allows them to break the link between their performance and their ability, because they intervened with diminishing their progress, diminishing their possibilities. So they get to hold on to the illusion that of course they would have been brilliant if they'd used all the time they had.
So the perfect is the enemy of the good.
Yes, indeed. And procrastinators, very often under the surface, are perfectionists. It's not something easily recognized. So if you say to someone who procrastinates because they are doing so much research that they never really get around to writing their report, and you say, you're being a perfectionist. And a procrastinator will say, no, I'm not a perfectionist. How can you say that? I don't get things done. But perfectionism is an attitude. It's a perspective that people hold that says that only something perfect is worthwhile. And that can be a grade. It can be a letter you're composing. It can be the information that you've collected. And we all know you can never collect all the information that's out there. But perfectionism is really a feeling that people have that they can only be okay if they're perfect. And that is a large contributor to procrastination and lives under the surface in many procrastinators.
Jane B. Burka is my guest. Her book is called Procrastination, Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. So what's going on, Jane, when people are afraid of success and they procrastinate?
Well, that's a little more counterintuitive because we tend to assume that we all want to be successful, and certainly in our culture there's a tremendous pressure to be successful. Nowadays, I think people feel that all the more because of the economy and the consequences of not being successful mean that you can lose your job, you can lose your health insurance, you can lose your standing. So there's this assumption that, of course, we want to be successful. But many people have a lot of anxiety about being successful. And, of course, procrastination interferes with your progress towards success. And their anxieties can be about all the responsibility that they might have to hold if they become successful and move to a higher level. The fear can be about perhaps becoming more successful than others around you. So a spouse might have some ambivalence about being far more successful than his or her partner. Or you might be more successful than your family of origin, the family you came from. And then there's a worry about what success will do to your relationships. So a lot of people, I think this is especially true of students when they get to college and they have an opportunity to do well and go to graduate school and have a profession or make more money. And if they've come from a family which has not had a professional background, they have a lot of anxiety about, well, how am I going to fit into my family now? And then for some people, what interferes with going for success is guilt. I don't deserve success. Usually the guilt people hold is for imaginary crimes. Typically, you feel guilty that you have hurt someone, that you have maybe stepped on someone's toes to get where you are. You didn't study, you got an A. Your best friend studied and got a C. There is a feeling that you are profiting and someone else is paying the price. And that guilt can interfere with someone letting themselves become more successful and using procrastination to slow yourself down.
You write that procrastinators have a complicated relationship to time. Can you talk about that?
Yes, that's one of my favorite subjects, actually. I think it's fascinating that people play games with time. And procrastinators are very confused about time, and they also tend to be in a fight with time. A lot of procrastinators either underestimate how long something is going to take. So they think, I don't have to start this now. I'll have plenty of time to do this later, when really they're busy later. They don't have time. Or procrastinators tend to think, well, this is going to take so much time that I have to wait until I have a whole weekend free, and I don't have a whole weekend free, so there's no point in getting started. So they tend to really misjudge how long things will take. And another aspect of the procrastinator and time is that a lot of procrastinators have this feeling that they can play against time and win, that there's a denial that time moves inexorably, that there really are 24 hours in a day, that every minute you spend is a minute gone. And so they have this kind of illusion, I would even call it a grandiosity, that they can conquer time. And, of course, it's true that, you know, we each have our own subjective relationship to time. I may be someone who knows when 5 minutes has passed, or because I'm a psychotherapist, I always know when 50 minutes has passed. But for a lot of people, their sense of how time passes does not match the time on the clock. And so they live in a state of time confusion. They never quite know where they are with respect to the clock. And so that feeds into procrastination because they don't have a clear sense of how long something's going to take, how much time they need, what time is it now. When we first started doing procrastination groups at the University of California at Berkeley, we asked the students, what are you putting off? And so the student said, I'm putting off my term paper. When is the term paper due? I don't know. So there's kind of a blind eye that's turned to time.
How do you help your patients and the students that come to your clinics to distinguish between what is pretty average amounts of procrastination and pretty benign and a real problem?
Well, that's a very important question because everybody procrastinates on something. There's too much for us to do in life. And so we all have to set our priorities and make our choices and focus on some things and let other things go. So we all procrastinate some of the time. I think that the distinction comes when procrastination is causing you trouble, when you are paying a price for it, when you suffer because of procrastination, or when it actually has a self-defeating effect. And there are two ways to look at that. One is to think about what are the external consequences of my procrastination. Am I having to pay late fees all the time? Is my job performance worse because of procrastination? Are my grades lower? Am I always fighting with my spouse because she wants me to do something and I don't get around to doing it? Are my relationships impacted? Am I late to everybody? So if there are external consequences in your life that are causing you trouble, that's a sign that procrastination is a problem. And the other kind of consequence that lets you know procrastination is hurting you may be less obvious because those are internal consequences. For example, if you really stress out when there's a deadline ahead of you and you start to build up that feeling of anxiety and dread, you're putting it off, you do other things to distract you, but you can't really enjoy them, your pleasure in life is diminished when you're worrying about procrastination. It also has internal consequences on your body because procrastination builds up stress. And then the more your body experiences stress, the more you're likely to get sick, the less able you are to concentrate, the more your memory is interfered with, the less well you can focus. So procrastination has internal physical consequences. And then, of course, there's the problem of how you feel about yourself. You know, I am so bad. I'm always behind. Why other people can do it and I can't do it, there must be something wrong with me. So it can have a very damaging effect on your self-image.
Jane B. Burka is my guest. She's a psychologist and co-founder of the first procrastination treatment group in the U.S. at UC Berkeley. Her book, recently updated, is called Procrastination, Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. You can join the conversation, don't wait, by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is psychologist Jane B. Burka. She's a co-founder of the first procrastination treatment group in the U.S. Her book, recently updated to include new scientific evidence, is called Procrastination: Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. You know, Jane, reading the book over the weekend, it occurred to me that I sort of dealt with my own procrastination by choosing a career where every single day I have a hard and fast deadline and it forces me to be very structured.
Right.
And I wondered if deadlines are good for people with procrastination issues.
Deadlines are very important, and the sooner the better. You are exactly right that having an imminent deadline is one of the best things to help people manage procrastination. When we talk about dealing with procrastination, we always have two perspectives. One is what you and I were just talking about, the reasons behind procrastination, but the second is what you're pointing to now, which is what to do about it. What are the techniques that work? And what you came up with intuitively is one of the most important techniques, which is to have a deadline which is imminent, because research has found, and this is research from social science through behavioral economics and psychologists, we have found that when a deadline is far off in the future, people tend to think it's not important. Now, that has nothing to do with how important it actually is. Like, let's say saving money for retirement is very important, but it's not right in front of you if you're 35 years old. So you tend to diminish the importance of a goal if it's far off. When the goal is right in front of you, like tomorrow's deadline, it seems very important. So one of the problems that procrastinators have is that when they don't think about time and they don't locate their goals in time in a specific way, the goal becomes very vague and it seems far off and not very compelling. So we encourage people to pick a goal that can be broken down into small pieces and then to set mini goals, interim goals, to achieve on the way to the larger goal. Because if you have a little goal for tomorrow, you're more likely to take it seriously and do it than if you're only thinking about the big goal that's 4 months from now.
When do we tend to start procrastinating in life?
I think that people who have a serious problem with procrastination started very young. We've heard that people started procrastinating in grade school. I think that for myself, I started in college. I actually grew up in Galveston, Texas.
Very nice.
And then I went to college in Boston, and it was a very competitive school, and I felt a bit overwhelmed. I felt a lot overwhelmed by the level of the other students. And so, you know, in that circumstance, you have two choices. You can really work hard and rise to the occasion, or you can say, oh, I can't deal with this. Well, that was my first approach. I can't deal with this. So it was only after I got my first semester grades that I decided that procrastination was not helping me any, and I pulled myself together and then, you know, did well, majored in psychology, and went on to graduate school. But I think that if people procrastinate in elementary school, usually that has something to do with the dynamics of their families. A lot of pressure being put on them by a parent. You know, no child of mine gets a B. I don't like it that you came in second. And the pressure to do well, to please a parent, can make a child go the other way and really lose interest in being competitive. And then the older you get, I think the more procrastination has to do with your peer group, with your academic life. Like I was saying, you know, landing in a college where the standards were very high. Some people go to college as the first person in their families to attend college, and then they feel a lot of pressure to succeed on behalf of the whole clan. And when there's this pressure, one of the ways to deal with the pressure is to drop back and not compete, and that's what procrastination does for you. I think as you get older and into the workforce, procrastination actually then takes on a different kind of meaning, because if you're the head of a family and you procrastinate, you're then causing trouble not just for yourself, but for the people around you as well. So relationship dynamics and power dynamics and battles for control get involved. Some people, when they have jobs where they don't feel that they have a lot of autonomy, where they don't get to have much say in what they do, where they don't feel appreciated, where they have a boss who micromanages, they procrastinate as a way of feeling like they're making at least some impact on the way their lives go at work. So procrastination is almost always a self-defeating solution, but it's a solution that's the best the person can come up with given the problems that they're facing.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Jane Burka is here talking about her book, Procrastination, Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. Let's go to Vicki in North Richland Hills. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I've just come into this kind of midstream, and I've missed part of it when I was on the phone, but my son was born 19 days late, and he was truly an overdue baby, and he has been procrastinating ever since, way, shape, or form. Part of it, I understand, is part of the social dynamics. He was also he's a survivor of cancer, which he was diagnosed with when he was in elementary school, which, again, is something that tends to make you feel very powerless. And I think we understand that sometimes he does use this power of procrastination to set his own agenda. He is very bright. I mean, he's in the genius category, and so it was easy for him to delay doing many things in school and to pull it out at the last minute and still get a good grade, although grades aren't a great motivator for him. Now he's in his 30s. He's had several job changes. He's gone back to college. He took a degree in he's got a master's in creative writing. He's very bright, but he is, you know, he's not an accountant type of thinker.
Still putting things off, even in his 30s.
He just refuses to be stampeded. He sees part of this as not being a lemming and going with the flow, so to speak.
Well, what do you think about that, Jane?
Well, I think that it's actually, you've brought up, Vicki, another whole stream of psychological reasons behind procrastination, which is the fear of feeling controlled. That's what you're emphasizing about the way he speaks about it now, that he wants to do things on his own time schedule, have control over certain things in his life, like when and how he does things. And for people who are battling with this feeling of wanting control, the sense of autonomy that they get from setting their own agenda is actually more significant to them psychologically than what we think of as success or than going along with the flow. And I think you've brought in another element which is very important, that especially when someone has had a disease and a disease in early life, that the impact on them is lifelong. They overcome the disease, but the psychological impact of having been helpless to themselves, to fight the disease, you know, dependent on the parents, dependent on doctors, dependent on medication, that can really set someone up to not want to feel dependent and helpless in the future. So I think that if your son has found a way to be satisfied in his life, even if it doesn't look right to you, then that's one thing. But if he's not satisfied with his life, and if he's still upset about not having all that he wants, then I think that some counseling could be very helpful.
We have an email here from Jim in Arlington who asks about the relationship between depression and procrastination, if there is one.
Yes, there definitely is one, and that's a very good question, because when you feel depressed, you don't feel like doing anything. So you tend to put off things and don't get things done. And depression is part of the biological contribution to procrastination, because depression, of course, comes from an imbalance of biochemicals in the brain. And so when you are low on energy and you don't feel good about yourself and it's hard to put one foot in front of the other, then you're procrastinating. But in that case, it may be that the major reason is not fear of failure or fear of success or fear of feeling controlled. The major reason is this biological contribution of depression. And in that case, it's important to address depression, either with medication, which can be very helpful, or with counseling and therapy, or by doing things for yourself that can help you feel better, like getting exercise, like trying to be social, just taking one step at a time in the direction of something that might help you feel better. And even if they're, and especially if they're little steps, because if you're depressed, you don't have the energy to change your whole life between today and tomorrow.
You write here that as we're trying to fix this problem and making these sort of bite-sized goals for ourselves on the way to a larger goal, it's important not to wait until we feel like doing something because the spirit may never move us.
Right. A lot of people have the idea that they shouldn't start now because they're tired, they're not in the mood, they're not inspired, the sun is shining. You know, there are all these reasons that we give ourselves that we call excuses, that Lenora and I call excuses. Because you say to yourself, well, I'm not inspired now, so I'll wait for inspiration. Well, that conclusion, so I'll wait for inspiration, is part of the illusion that procrastinators live with all the time. I think that procrastination, in many cases, is really a struggle against accepting reality. And the reality is that you never know when inspiration is coming. So it makes sense to start now and to start with using a small amount of time on your project. We recommend that people work on only one goal at a time rather than trying to change everything, that they break their goal down into these small steps, and that you spend maybe just 15 minutes working on some part of what it is you have to do. For people with attention deficit disorder, we recommend they spend 5 minutes or 1 minute. Because if you just do something, the feeling of accomplishment is sort of a reward in itself. It's usually not as bad as you think it's going to be. And that helps motivate you to keep going.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to John in Forney. Hey, John.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
Chris, first of all, I just want to say that you are one of the great assets the Metroplex has to offer.
Thank you.
And Dr. Berker, you are exactly right. I am a procrastinator to the fullest, and it's also about my perfectionism.
Uh-huh.
I just want to also say that what I found for collegiate success, and I just graduated from SMU in December 19th last month.
Oh, good for you.
And I have to say that NPR has been my crutch that I have lived off of as far as academic success. But
are we distracting you from what you have to get done, John?
No, you actually have benefited me. You've solved a lot of problems, like, you know, 6-hour deadlines before 30-page papers are due and everything else like that. And I found my topic just from listening to one of your guys' shows, and I was able to write a full 30-page paper within 6 hours on it. It's just a matter. But I also think I fool myself too with being a procrastinator. I think I'm actually a master of time than actually like battling against it.
Yes.
But, yeah, I hear everything that you're saying. Everything that you're saying is absolutely correct about perfection and about, you know, waiting till the last minute to do something. And then if you pull off an A, then, you know, it's that much greater. You know, but if you get a B+, then you always have the excuse, well, I did it within 6 hours or 8 hours before mm-hmm. it was due or something like that. But, yeah, NPR actually
I could have gotten an A if I had used all the time I needed.
Exactly, exactly. But NPR actually helped me graduate from SMU with, like, a 3.8 GPA. So, yeah, procrastination is what I'm finding now is that now that I'm actually looking for a real career out there in the workforce, procrastination mm-hmm. is my enemy right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, but I love the show, and I just wanted to say that you are absolutely correct, and I just wanted to comment on NPR's value of information that it has provided me. And I am a member, and I love you guys' show. So have a good day.
Thanks very much for your call, John. And I'm not sure we can take all that credit. It sounds like he's done pretty well for himself.
Yes, he has. But, you know, he's at an important transition point because when you're in college, things are so structured for you. You go to a class, you have a deadline, you have a paper, you have an exam. Now that he's out and John is looking for, he didn't just say a job, he said a career. So he's having to figure out what he wants to do. And that's a much more ill-defined process than being a student. And it really, procrastination in a way, is a more difficult problem there because you don't exactly know what your goal is. You have to make up your own goals. You have to figure out your values, what matters to you in terms of how you want to live your life. You have to identify through a lot of self-exploration your strengths and weaknesses in terms of a job and a career. Then you have to look for a job, which is very difficult in these days. So I think that it's like he's gone from a structured environment to an unstructured world, and that requires someone to be their own teacher, so to speak. You know, give your own grade. You're only pleasing yourself now. So procrastination now may be hurting him, especially, as he said, in terms of perfectionism, because your first job isn't going to be a perfect job. Your first application isn't going to be perfect. This is a learning process. And one of the things that we tell perfectionists is that what's important is what you learn from what you do. Not that it's 100% every time, first time, all the time, but that if you can learn from your mistakes and put that into practice the next time, that's a lot better than trying to be perfect.
We have an email here from Nancy in Dallas who writes, "When I finally get around to doing the project I've been putting off, I get a huge high. This only occurs when I complete something I've put off, not when I address things in the normal course. Is this vicious cycle characteristic of procrastination?"
Yes, it's characteristic of the adrenaline junkie procrastinator. There are people who actually work better under pressure. Most procrastinators say that, "Oh, I work better under pressure." For some people, that's actually true. Maybe that's true of Nancy. If she finds that she puts it off, she gets excited, she gets it done, she goes through that great rush at the end, and it's not hurting her because she's done a good enough job, then she's fine. But if she finds that she gets the high of having accomplished something at the last minute, but it's actually not as good as it needs to be, then she might have more of a problem and try to find ways to make her interim steps more exciting.
Jane B. Burka is with us. She's a psychologist and co-founder of the first procrastination treatment group in the U.S. Her book is called Procrastination, Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Jane B. Burka. She's a psychologist and co-founder of the first procrastination treatment group in the U.S. Her book is called Procrastination, Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. That is where we find Horace in Irving. Hi, Horace.
Yes, hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question ever since from the middle school till now, I have a habit that before I have to study, what I will do, I will fix my room. For example, put everything in place, make sure that room is tidy and it's clean and everything is in its place. And then I will start studying. Sometimes, I mean, it won't take me too much more time. It might take me like 15, 20 minutes, but I was wondering if this is just would you call it as a procrastination, or would you not call it procrastination? Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Well, I think that it really depends on whether this is a problem for you. It sounds to me as though you do what you need to do, and then you get down to work. In the world of procrastination, 15 to 20 minutes is not much. So I would say that if cleaning your desk is like cleaning your head, you know, getting yourself, your mind uncluttered as you straighten up, and it gets you ready, it gets you in the mood to do your work, then you have actually found a technique that helps you optimize your ability to work. I think that a lot of people may find that whenever they're supposed to work, they end up not just cleaning up their study, they clean up their house. They do the dishes. You know, they wash the car. So they are finding all kinds of tasks that have to be done in advance of sitting down. But I think that what Horace has said is that maybe he has figured out, which is something we really ask everyone to do, what does it take for you to be in your optimal work environment? And if that is a clean desk and it takes you 20 minutes to do it, then that's fine. For some people, they have to be in a quiet area. Some people have to study with a lot of things going on around them. You know, you see students who are working on their laptops and texting and listening to music all at the same time. And if it works for you, that's great. So I think that you have to find out what is your optimum environment for helping yourself get down to work. And it sounds to me like Horace has found his.
We have an email here from Brian who writes, I'm about to enter doctoral graduate school and I'm concerned that my procrastination will make life even more difficult than as an undergrad. My procrastination seems to stem from a feeling that each minute is precious. When I need to be somewhere at a certain time, I find myself trying to squeeze in reading just one more article or checking one more thing online until I have only 5 minutes left to shower, which often results in me being late somewhere. My procrastination affects what time I go to bed, how long I wait to cook dinner, every other facet of life that requires time-based productivity. As a note of irony, Brian says, my graduate studies will involve researching time perception. Is there anything you can recommend to help battle those procrastination demons?
Well, I'm not surprised about what his dissertation is going to be on, because we tend to write about what interests us, what we know, and what we struggle with. I wrote a book on procrastination after I was in graduate school for 10 years. So I think that Brian is right that in graduate school, procrastination can be a problem because graduate school is so much less structured than undergraduate school. But I was interested that Brian said that he thinks that each minute is precious, because he's defining precious as meaning time for himself. He's not thinking that each minute is precious when it comes to showing up on time for someone, or each minute is precious when it comes to taking care of your body in order to feed it on time, in order to give it enough rest. So it's not exactly that each minute is precious. It's that Brian seems to have a pressure to do more and more, and that's where I would be interested in asking him to think about, where does this pressure come from, that you always have to do more, that there's a feeling that you can squeeze in more, and then you're denying the reality of how much time it takes to take a shower, get dressed, and go somewhere. The precious minutes in his mind are the ones that he's using for himself. But the minutes that it actually takes to get a shower, get dressed, leave the house, drive the car, meet someone, those are not precious to him because he's not paying attention to that part.
I don't know if this is procrastination exactly, but everybody knows that person who never says no to, say, a volunteer opportunity or chairing the school bake sale. And these people seem to always be squeezed. What's that about?
Well, I think that people who can never say no do end up having a problem with procrastination because they've gotten themselves involved in too many projects. And so something's got to give. And sometimes you say yes to everything because it helps you feel like a good person, and you want to help your friends, and you put other people's agenda in front of your own. But we have to look below the surface of that, because saying yes to a lot of things is really a built-in guarantee that you can't give enough attention to everything. So it can be like procrastination or a kind of procrastination, because you give yourself an excuse for not getting everything done. And the excuse is such a lovely one. You know, that you've been so helpful and you've involved yourself in so many activities. But there is a way that you have provided a buffer so that when you forget something, when you drop a stitch, when you show up late, when you don't send the article to the newspaper that you were supposed to do for your organization, oh, I just was so busy, I had so much to do. So I think it's important to really look at why you let yourself get overcommitted, because that is a built-in guarantee of procrastination.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We go next to Wichita Falls and speak with Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hello. I wondered if there is any link in some persons between a dislike of detail, inattention to detail, and a pattern of procrastination.
Well, yes, I think that certainly can be true, because for some people, you know, you have to look at how your mind works naturally. Some people are very detail-oriented, and some people are not detail-oriented. But then where procrastination comes in is that the research has shown that people tend to put off things that they expect they will not enjoy, or something they expect they will not do well, where they don't expect to succeed. And so if you don't like details and you have a task to do that takes a lot of detail, you're more likely to put that off because you're expecting that it's going to be unpleasant. You're going to have a hard time with it. It's going to be a struggle. And I also think that if you don't think about details, it can be very hard to prioritize. It can be hard to know, make a list and stick to it. And it can be hard to pay attention to how much time things take. So I would recommend that someone who has a dislike of detail try to enhance their capacity to manage details. This is where the current neuroscience research has been very helpful, because they have let us know, the researchers, that your brain is used to working the way it works, but it can be changed. And so you can help yourself become better at working with details, but you have to do that a little bit at a time with repetition and practice. And then you'll get better at working with details. It won't be so obnoxious or aversive, and then you're more likely to tackle the things that take detail attention.
Just about everybody these days understands that exercise is really important if you want to be healthy, but this is like really high on many people's list of things that they put off. What do you suggest to people who mean to, maybe they had a New Year's resolution and they still haven't gotten off the couch?
Well, I think that exercise is one of the things that people often think magically about. Like, I joined a gym a year ago, I haven't been in a year, but this week I'm going every day. And so people tend to, because they want to exercise and they know it's good for them and they think it'll help them be healthy, they tend to want to be transformed into an exerciser. And so I think it makes more sense to start with something that is pleasant for you. So even though jogging may be the best exercise, if you start by walking around the block, that's a start. And I think that the other thing about exercise is that it can be intimidating to people, because if you go to a class and you're just joining and everybody else is already in the class and they do so well, or you go to the gym and you compare your body to other people's bodies, it speaks to anxiety and self-esteem. So I think the best way to help people start exercising is to find the way that is going to be the most protective and productive for you, so you don't have to turn into a champion tomorrow.
And whatever we're trying to get over procrastinating about, you say it's really important to take a look at our personal body clock. If you're a night person, don't swear you're going to start doing something tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Yes, exactly. We all have our individual body rhythms. And there's something in the brain that's called a clock gene that regulates when your body likes to do things. And so some people are night owls and some people work well in the morning. And so if you are somebody who falls asleep at 10 o'clock, don't wait until 9 to start doing your work. You have to accept the reality of how your body works. You'll notice I've talked about reality a lot in this hour, because procrastinators are really fighting with reality, either the reality of their limitations or the reality of what's expected or the reality of the clock and the calendar. But the reality of your body is, the body doesn't lie. And so if your body is telling you that you need to go to sleep at 10 o'clock, then that's important to organize yourself around that, because we do each have a different biorhythm that tells us when we're most effective, and it makes more sense to do the hardest work when you're the most alert and most effective. In other words, don't set yourself up to have a bigger problem by trying to fight your body.
What do you suggest to non-procrastinators who have chosen a life partner who seems to put everything off?
Oh, well, I suggest that they try patience. I suggest that they try understanding. It can be very frustrating for someone who does not procrastinate to live with someone who procrastinates, because it's hard for the non-procrastinator to get inside the mindset of the procrastinator. The feeling is, look, I can do it. Why can't you do it? I make a list. I get it done. What's your problem? But I think it's important to accept that the other person, in fact, has a different relationship to time, has a different relationship to getting things done. And it's not a good idea to nag them. It's not a good idea to rescue them. I think what helps is to offer yourself as an ally. You have this thing coming up. It might be hard for you. If you need my help, let me know. And to work collaboratively, not to be in a superior position of, I know how to do it, and I told you so. And then I think that you can help somebody lay out the steps that they might not be able to see. And it's very important not to blame the procrastinator in an angry way, and not to be judgmental and critical, because most procrastinators feel bad about themselves in the first place. Procrastination is a way of covering up something that you feel bad about. So it doesn't help to hit somebody over the head when they're struggling.
Well, I'm guessing everything that you just said also applies to people whose kids' procrastination drives them crazy.
Yes, it's so painful for parents when they see their children procrastinating in school and not getting good grades. And it's really one of the, I think, the hardest challenges that parents have to face. And if you're a procrastinating parent yourself, you feel like, oh, they take after me. And on the other hand, if you're very organized, you think, you know, why haven't I been able to help him be more organized? So with children, I think that you can apply some of the techniques that we talk about in our book, where you help them understand better about how to use their time. You help them set up goals. You help them structure, especially if a child has ADD, because a lot of children with ADD are procrastinators. It's hard to focus and it's hard to prioritize. So if you can offer yourself as an ally rather than a critic to help them learn the skills they need, then you can help them with their procrastination. But the bottom line is that it's their procrastination. It's not really about you.
In a word or two, is there still some bugaboo in your life that you would put off if you could?
Oh, I put off learning about the computer. It's one of those things that I'm not very good at, and so I tend to fight with it. But I have actually made an appointment with a computer person to come and help me. So I think that getting support is a great way to help yourself by getting someone else to help you.
Jane B. Burka is a psychologist and co-founder of the first procrastination treatment group in the U.S. at the University of California at Berkeley. Her newly updated book is called Procrastination: Why You Do It, What to Do About It Now. Jane, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.